Before I call the next case, if you're sitting in the audience and you have a phone or anything that's going to ring or go off, please silence that now. Otherwise, the sheriff will be coming to see you about stepping outside or losing your phone. So, thank you. Our next case on our docket is styled 05-18-01345-CV, NetBank SSB versus Winsted PC. I know that both sides are aware of how the timing system works here at the Court of Appeals. For the first 20 minutes, you get 20 minutes originally. At the podium, it's like a traffic light. For the first 17 minutes, it'll be green. For the next 3 minutes, it'll be yellow. And when the red light comes on, unless there's a question from one of the justices, your time is up. Clearly, if there's questioning, we can go on for probably until the next group runs us out of here this afternoon. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal with a one-minute warning. It's the same timing system, green for four, yellow, red. You can be assured that we have read these briefs and we've looked at the issues. We're not going to be as familiar with this case. It's quite in-depth as the parties are. But I don't read your issues to you. I let you jump to wherever you want to start. And with that, the only thing I do ask is that each time you approach the podium, that you state your name and who you represent, because we taped it. This is taped. And with that, we'll get started.
Thank you. My name is Bruce Bagelman. I represent the appellant, NetBank SSB. I'm with the law firm Stinson LLP, and at counsel table is my co-counsel, Mr. Paul Lackey. If one were to look at the record in this case, which is over 5,300 pages, and to look at the briefs that have been filed by the parties, which I think both sides very competently and adequately briefed the issues, one would think that this matter before the court today is a phenomenally and incredibly complicated issue. But ultimately, the issue that this court needs to decide as to whether or not the summary judgment that was granted by the trial court was done so properly or in error is very simple. As a matter of quick background, this is a legal malpractice case that arises out of what we allege Winsted's improper handling of a foreclosure that occurred many years ago in 2011. Of commercial real estate that secured a $60 million loan made by NetBank and ultimately participated in by a number of different lenders made by NetBank. Ultimately, after the foreclosure, there was a $30 million deficiency between the amount that was credit bid at the foreclosure and the amount of the balance due on the loan. At that time, in what is referred to in the briefing as the underlying litigation, NetBank sought to recover its deficiency from the publicly traded company that ultimately guaranteed the loan. In the underlying litigation, NetBank filed a summary judgment that it contends was denied because of the irregularities that were raised by the guarantor in the underlying litigation with respect to the foreclosure that was at issue. We're here today because of a summary judgment that the trial court granted that was one of many summary judgments, as you can tell from your review of the briefs and the record, that have been filed in this case. But the first point and the first place to start in determining whether the summary judgment was granted is to look at the summary judgment itself, which is found in the record, in the original clerk's record at page 65. There were two simple bases for the summary judgment that we're here on today, filed by Winsted. First is they contend, as a part of the traditional summary judgment, that the foreclosure at issue was valid as a matter of law. And they set forth various reasons that they believe that they established as a matter of law that the foreclosure was valid. The second point, the second basis of the summary judgment was a no evidence summary judgment that NetBank lacked admissible causation, admissible expert testimony on causation for a couple reasons. One of which that our expert, Mr. Paul Johnson, was not qualified to give opinions on the standard of care, and second, that he was not qualified to give opinions on causation. And for purpose of the day, most specifically in the summary judgment motion, they said he was not qualified to give causation opinions on what would have ultimately happened in the underlying trial because he was a, quote, deal lawyer and not a litigator. As the panel is aware from reading our briefs, Next Bank in this case has two theories of causation, one of which is that but for the negligence of Winstead, the trial judge in the underlying litigation, who is Judge Moberg, would have granted the summary judgment on the deficiency claim, but ultimately that was denied. And a second alternative theory of causation is, had the Next Bank gone to trial in the underlying litigation, that as a result of the errors in conducting the deficiency, Next Bank would have been unsuccessful or would have lost that trial and not recovered its deficiency. The last basis of the summary judgment is that our professional negligence claim is barred by the anti-fracturing rule. I first want to address the no evidence portion of the summary judgment. We believe, and I don't believe it's contested, that if there is a pure legal issue, that is improper basis for summary judgment. We cite the Harrell versus AJ Record case, that a purely legal issue can never be the basis of a no evidence summary judgment, and the court is in error if it considers and grants a no evidence summary judgment on that issue. In this case, in August of 2018, the trial court ruled that the issue of causation was a question of law. It was on the record. It was transcribed. It's a binding order pursuant to the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure 31.1A2. In fact, at that hearing, which is attached as the supplemental reporter's record, the court set October 1 for the hearing for each party to file competing summary judgments on the issue of causation. And in fact, both parties, 21 days before October 1st, on September 7th, 2018, each filed a motion for summary judgment on the issue of causation. The scope and the intent of the trial court's ruling was clear that all causation was going to be an issue of law to be decided by the court on summary judgment when, on that same day, August 20th, 2018, there was another summary judgment that was set before the court that had, in fact, been filed before the summary judgment that we're here on today. This summary judgment was filed on August the 3rd, 2018. On July 13th, 2018, Winstead filed another different summary judgment on the issue of causation. However, and that was set also on the same day of August 20th, 2018, but the court, and it's in our brief and it's in the clerk's record at supplemental reporter's record at page 67, said, to the extent this other motion, to the extent it is a no evidence summary judgment motion, I'm going to deny that today because I have ruled here moments ago that causation is an issue of law. So there is no basis for the court to grant the no evidence summary judgment that we're here on today regarding causation because it was a question of law by the court that was going to be decided. And to the extent, and it's not
just, and again, there's a lot of back and forth in this case, obviously. So my understanding is there was a ruling with regard to where he said whatever he was specifically discussing, where he said causation was a matter of law. He requested that you all filed the cross motions for summary judgment, which were traditional, not no evidence. But then he ruled prior to the hearing on those two cross motions, correct?
He did not rule on those two cross motions prior to the hearing. What he ruled on is prior to the hearing at a later date. He made that ruling on August the 20th. On September 13th, there was a hearing on the motion that that he did grant that we're here on and that is a part of this appeal.
So
and
if
that
he
motion,
believed that it was a, if what you're telling us is that the court's intention was that all causation was a matter of law and he had previously denied a no evidence summary judgment for that reason, why would he then turn around and grant one if that was his belief?
The record's not clear whether or not the order that he, the summary judgment that he granted that is on this appeal, whether or not he was granting a no evidence portion of the summary judgment or whether he was granting the traditional part of the summary judgment that was based on whether or not the foreclosure was valid. So to the extent that he intended to grant the no evidence judgment, I think that was an error because the issue of causation was a question of law. And to the extent that he granted the traditional part of the summary judgment that they claimed that the foreclosure was valid, I'm going to address why I believe there was more than sufficient evidence in the record and that it would be, it was an error to grant it on that basis. So either way, and we don't know because of the way the judges enter orders as to whether or not it was on both the no evidence and the traditional, to the extent he did that, even though he had previously ordered causation to be an issue of law, then that was an error on the judge's part. Even though I do not believe that the court, this court, should consider the no evidence, nor should have the trial court, and it would have been an error, I want to point very quickly to where there is evidence in the record regarding causation with respect to our expert. Contemporaneous with the filing of the summary judgment that is on appeal, Winstead filed a motion to exclude the testimony of Mr. Johnson. And the basis, as I alluded to earlier, the basis of that motion was, one, that Mr. Johnson wasn't qualified to testify on the standard of care, and two, he wasn't qualified to testify on any issue of causation, including and specifically that he wasn't qualified to testify regarding what would have happened in the hypothetical trial that never occurred in the underlying case. That motion was heard on August the 20th, 2018, at the same time that the court heard and made a ruling on that causation was a matter of law. And the court entered an order on that motion, and the order was dated August 21st, 2018, and it can be found in the record at the second supplemental clerk's record at 35. And that order specifically said two things of importance. Number one, it denied the motion to exclude to the extent it challenged Mr. Johnson's qualifications to testify regarding the standard of care. And importantly, for purposes of this motion, where they say there's no expert evidence because Mr. Johnson's not qualified to testify would have happened at trial, the court denied the motion with respect to trial outcome causation and stated specifically that Paul Johnson and his opinions about trial outcome are not stricken or excluded from the evidence of this case. That order was entered on August 21st, 2018. The hearing on the summary judgment that is on appeal was on September 13th. Next Bank filed its response, and attached to its response was Exhibit B, which was the affidavit of Mr. Johnson, which attached to his affidavit not only his curriculum vitae with his qualifications, but his 21-page expert report and his supplemental designation of expert opinions. Mr. Johnson's affidavit can be found in the record at the second supplemental clerk's record at 797. Once Next Bank filed its response to the summary judgment and attached Mr. Johnson's opinions and expert report, because the court had already denied the motion to exclude earlier, Next Bank never filed any objections to Mr. Johnson's report and opinions or in any way challenged it. So for purposes of the summary judgment, Mr. Johnson's, all of his opinions were in the record, uncontroverted. Next Bank didn't object to it. They didn't submit any evidence of their own experts challenging his opinions. And so his opinion that Next Bank would have lost the case had it gone to trial, which was the sole basis of the no evidence summary judgment that we're on here today, that evidence is in the record. And even if the court could have properly considered the no evidence motion, it should have been denied because there's uncontroverted evidence in the record.
Okay, so here's a question just so that I can be clear. When you started, you talked about there were two theories but for Winstead's alleged errors, then the summary judgment would have been granted. My understanding is the judge said that Mr. Johnson could not opine about what would have happened with the summary judgment. So that's out. Am I right about that?
That theory is not out. What the court said is that with respect to whether or not the summary judgment should have been granted in the underlying case, that I'm not going to consider expert testimony from either party, not Mr. Johnson or any expert testimony from Winstead. And both parties in the causation summary judgments that were filed but had not been heard briefed that issue. So it wasn't as if the theory was gone.
Okay.
And you raise a good point, and that is that in the summary judgment that is on appeal and we're talking about here today, the only aspect of Mr. Johnson's opinions that they said he was unqualified to give related to what would have happened at trial.
Okay, and that's actually where I wanted to get to.
And
when you're talking about, and that's where I think I saw the nuance in the record in reading the arguments, which is this. As you said when you were arguing, it was the theory was as a result of their alleged errors that Next Bank would have been unsuccessful at trial. So here is my question. Are you saying that Next Bank would have been unsuccessful and that they could not have proven their sufficiency claim, or are you claiming that the guarantor would have been that the guarantor would have won on their wrongful foreclosure claim? What is the argument, and what's the what is the cause of Next Bank's loss?
Well, the cause is the idea of whether or not they could have prevailed on their deficiency in proving the existence of a valid foreclosure is an issue that as we put in our brief, was raised for the first time on appeal and was the subject of other summary judgments. But we believe, and the basis of the opinion is that we wouldn't have prevailed in the underlying trial because of the fact that we would not have been able to prove that the existence of a valid foreclosure, which would have been required, or based upon other defenses that may have been raised by the guarantor in the underlying trial. So there's numerous bases as to why we believe the Mr. Johnson has for his opinion that we would have been unsuccessful, and it's for all the reasons set forth in his trial, in his report. With respect to the what would have happened in summary judgment, that was not a basis of in the underlying case. That is not a basis of the summary judgment we're on here today. That was not a basis of the no evidence summary judgment. It was only with respect to what would have happened at trial. So the what would have happened in the summary judgment, that causation theory is still in this case. There is opinions regarding that theory. However, that issue, and it's admitted by Winstead in their briefs, is not before this court. So even if the trial court believed that it should have granted summary judgment on the no evidence aspect relating to what happened at trial, it failed to recognize that there was still another theory of causation, and there's evidence in the record of that theory of what would have happened at the summary judgment stage underlying litigation. So there was no basis to dismiss the whole case. With respect to the foreclosure, there's numerous fact issues as to establish that the foreclosure was invalid or to defeat the summary judgment. This court, and I believe the trial court, needed to look no further than Mr. Johnson's opinions and expert report that went into great detail as to where there were problems with the manner in which the foreclosure was conducted. Ultimately, his uncontroverted opinion is that as a result of the actions of Winstead, the foreclosure was void or voidable. That uncontroverted opinion in and of itself creates a fact issue regarding the validity of the foreclosure. And then Mr. Johnson goes on to set forth numerous other reasons as to why the foreclosure is valid. I think they're adequately set forth in our brief that the Section 8.2 of the loan agreement stated that unequivocally that Next Bank was the only party that can enforce remedies, that it was the one that needed to hire people to help it make certain the foreclosure was done properly, but that couldn't be handled by other people. There's evidence in the record and in Mr. Johnson's clear opinions in his report whether or not the Key Corp was a mortgage servicer and whether or not, therefore, it had authority to appoint the substitute trustee. So, again, there are the report itself creates a fact issue regarding the validity of foreclosure, and we go through in detail all the various reasons as to why the foreclosure was there's a fact issue regarding
the question from the bench because your time has expired, sir.
I'm sorry. I have one quick question. Other than Mr. Johnson's affidavit, what other evidence does Next Bank have to establish causation? Or is there anything? I'm just wanting to make sure I didn't miss anything.
There's evidence that was submitted as a part of the summary judgment on causation that was filed on September the 7th. That is in the record, and there's numerous documents. There's affidavits from other parties regarding the issue. That is in the record. And the various legal arguments, the loan document is in the evidence. The legal arguments that loan document trumps any inconsistencies with any deed of trust.
But it's mostly you're relying on Mr. Johnson's affidavit, though.
Yes.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, George Kreider, representing Winstead PC. If I could briefly give 4 points in a pretty short summary about why this court should affirm the judgment below, then I know the justices may have many comments. The Texas Supreme Court's Rogers versus Cinetti case requires the summary judgment to be affirmed here. The Supreme Court said, and I quote, when a legal malpractice claim arises from prior litigation, the plaintiff, that's Next Bank, must prove that the client would have obtained a more favorable result in the underlying litigation had the attorney conformed to the proper standard of care. It's their burden in the face of a no-evidence motion. And Justice Knoll, in response to one of your questions, they would have to prove that at trial they were going to lose because they wouldn't be able to establish a valid foreclosure and that the guarantor's clear waivers of any complaints about a deficiency somehow were insufficient. And we'll get to that. But Rogers, importantly, requires competent evidence from an expert on causation. It's not always a question of law. It requires competent evidence from an expert of causation. And the Supreme Court calls that case within a case. They have to prove that the lawyer's, quote, act or omission is a but-for cause of the injury or occurrence. And you have to show what would have happened both with the supposed negligence. Here, they say Judge Mulberg denied a summary judgment that he otherwise should have granted. Well, First of all, so what? Losing a summary judgment doesn't mean you lose a trial. If a lawyer had failed to put into evidence in a summary judgment a key piece of documentary evidence, no surprise if the trial court would deny a summary judgment. But that didn't prevent the lawyer, or in this case, Next Bank, from going to trial and winning their case. What happened here is that they didn't lose a right. They just chose to stop after summary judgment and not go to trial. Rogers versus Sonetti, which came from this court, says that you have to show what would have happened at trial, and it has to be through a competent expert. And you'll see, and I will point out to you, that the narrow issue that Mr. Johnson testified, and the only evidence they relied upon, and this responds to Justice Partita Kipnis's question, Johnson's one-sentence opinion about causation at trial is no evidence. It's contrary to established law and undisputed fact. Plaintiff didn't meet their burden in the trial court before Judge Ginsburg of showing that it would lose its deficiency judgment at trial against a guarantor who expressly waived and had no defenses. Instead of going to trial against a guarantor who had no defenses, they settled, and they now claim, well, we would have lost at trial. And they say, well, you didn't object to all the stuff that Mr. Johnson said. First of all, this court reviews the summary judgment record de novo. And as we pointed out in our brief at footnote 85 on page 23, the coastal transportation case, the Supreme Court says when you have incompetent evidence from an expert like Johnson, you don't even have to object to it. It is no evidence before this court looking at it de novo. And as I said, importantly here, losing an interlocutory motion for summary judgment in Judge Mulberg's court is not something where they actually lost the case. And if you look at Rogers, this was a case that I had in the trial court, before this court, in the Supreme Court. There, the plaintiff alleged that the alleged malpractice caused them to lose at trial, to lose their case. Same as here, we filed a no evidence of causation motion for summary judgment, arguing that Andrews Kurth's alleged errors didn't cause a loss at trial. And in the face of that motion, the plaintiffs came forward with three highly credentialed, experienced Dallas trial lawyers, Lewis Sifford, Peter Marcatos, and Chris Kalis. This court and the Supreme Court of Texas said the opinions of these three highly experienced, credentialed experts, two of whom tried the underlying case, was no evidence of causation. What they said was, and I quote, "Not any explanation will suffice," end quote. The affiant must state his or her reasoning for the expert opinion. Johnson doesn't do that. And here, causation in a legal malpractice case requires a true expert to give competent testimony. The Supreme Court in Rogers said, in summary, because the plaintiff Rogers needed competent expert testimony on causation to withstand summary judgment, and because he offered none, we conclude that the Court of Appeals did not err in affirming the trial court's judgment. Here, the plaintiff had to come forward with competent evidence that they would have lost at trial. Instead, what do they have? A conclusory statement. And again, if you look at Rogers, they say we've long held a conclusory statement is insufficient. In order to be competent summary judgment evidence, an expert's opinion must have a demonstrable and reasoned basis on which to evaluate. Let's look at what Johnson said, and this really should be part of your test. It is a one-sentence conclusory statement in the record at page 797. Here's what Mr. Johnson says in the face of our no-evidence motion. Attached is Exhibit C, is plaintiff's disclosure of rebuttal expert witnesses, which at pages 2 to 3 detail additional opinions, which I plan to offer. He doesn't even say he's offering, just he plans to do so. Then he goes on to say, These are true and correct and represent opinions which I am prepared to testify to in this matter and are incorporated by reference. Well, what he's doing is incorporating by reference the words of Next Bank's counsel. And what the Supreme Court says is that, quote, relaying the opinion of another witness without providing any basis for the borrowed conclusion is itself no evidence. That's the Supreme Court, 518 Southwestern 3rd at 406. So you have a conclusory statement about what he might plan to do in the future based on somebody else's words that don't say much of anything at all. And here's what he purports to adopt. That more, this is the statement by counsel in a disclosure, more likely than not, the borrower and guarantor would have prevailed on their wrongful foreclosure claims had they been properly presented by borrower and guarantor at a trial of the matter, end quote. First of all, they acknowledged that they had a burden to show what would have happened at trial. And the question for this court, de novo, looking at what Mr. Johnson says is, does he even get up to bat, let alone provide the high level of expert testimony that the Supreme Court requires? And here, if you look at what they say, it's only more likely than not the borrower would have prevailed. So that's sort of like, maybe they'd win, maybe they'd lose. That's not a conclusion. That's not an opinion. That is not evidence. And again, Winstead didn't have to have any specific objection to this incompetent opinion. It's simply no evidence. And the coastal transportation case, the Supreme Court's case that we cited at footnote 85 of our brief, explains that. This also is a purported expert opinion that is contrary to the law. And they have made no explanation for that. The well-established law that we've put in our brief is that you don't have to prove a valid foreclosure in order to sustain a deficiency claim. And we argued that in our brief at pages 24 and 25. The Texas Supreme Court has expressly rejected as, quote, clearly erroneous, end quote, the theory that a prerequisite to the recovery of a deficiency judgment is establishing a valid foreclosure sale. That's the Terrence Savings case, 1965, Texas Supreme Court. Thus, the well-established law.
Mr. Kreider, yes. If I may interrupt you here. So it seems to me that all of this comes down to causation. And so if that's the case, why did y'all focus on the question of a valid or invalid foreclosure in your motion for summary judgment if causation was Winstead's main issue?
There were two grounds on those. And so
we're all focusing here on causation. So
right. Well, we wanted the court to be able to also see that they were unable to prove these four alleged errors that they say transformed this into an invalid foreclosure. But they were alternate theories, and we believe, of course, the court can affirm on any of these. Causation clearly is the bullet that kills their case. It is the Rogers case clearly says, based on these facts on causation on this record, that the summary judgment should be affirmed. But we did move on traditional grounds as well as no evidence grounds. And this argument that Mr. Bagelman has about another hearing on another motion for summary judgment is a complete red herring. We did file an earlier motion for summary judgment, which was directed to their argument that alleged errors caused Judge Mulberg to deny a motion for summary judgment. I know Judge Mulberg is one of your colleagues now. I think he was well known for frequently denying motions for summary judgment for a variety of reasons. The second theory, though, on which they had to prove and provide competent evidence was they were going to lose its trial no matter what happened in Judge Mulberg's court on summary judgment. What happens is they're talking about a different hearing on August the 20th, 2018, on a different motion that was never ruled upon. And contrary to what Mr. Backman told you, the purported ruling was never reduced to a signed order. If you'll look at the first supplemental reporter's record at page 67, his co-counsel, Mr. Zappandowski, said Thank you, Your Honor, we will submit an order. Well, they never did. They never submitted an order, and statements by Judge Ginsburg at an unrelated hearing that's not the subject of this appeal that were never reduced to an order are simply not binding on this court. We cited the Richardson case in our brief at page 19. But even had this ruling been reduced to some writing, it's merely an interlocutory order, and trial judges change their mind all the time. And the point is, Judge Ginsburg granted this motion. And for them to say it really was not a no-evidence motion flies in the face of what it says. They try to argue to you now that it was not a no-evidence motion. Well, the order on it, Clerk's Record 368, says it grants Winstead's traditional and no-evidence motion for summary judgment. Throughout the motion, we point out it is a no-evidence motion. We point out there is no evidence of causation, Clerk's Record at 65. We state, quote, plaintiffs have no evidence that borrower or guarantor would have prevailed, Clerk's Record at 66. We quote, plaintiffs lack admissible expert testimony on causation and thus have no evidence of causation, Clerk's Record at 74. It goes on and on, and the grounds for the motion repeat that it is a no evidence motion. So in the face of that, what is the evidence? And this comes back to your question of counsel, what is the evidence? And the only evidence they have of causation is this incompetent affidavit.
And I meant to ask competent evidence.
Correct. And but that is the only evidence to which they point. They try to argue in their brief on reply that Mr. Johnson said, well, they provided some evidence that the cost would have been increased because they had to go forward after a motion for summary judgment. The Supreme Court in Aiken Gump versus National Development, which is at 299 Southwest 3rd, 106, a 2009 opinion, rejected that same argument. There, they said there was no evidence that if the party had recovered a favorable judgment, it would not have paid appellate fees to defend the judgment. Likewise here, there's no evidence that even if they'd won the summary judgment, that the borrower and guarantor weren't going to appeal. And ultimately, and perhaps most importantly, under the loan agreements, if Next Bank prevailed, they were going to collect whatever the attorney's fees and costs were. So there is no evidence of causation. The court ruled on a no-evidence motion. There was no evidence, and this court should affirm on that basis. Their reply cited for the first time two cases that are easily distinguishable.
Before you go on, I have another question. Back to the validity of the foreclosure. Does the existence of issues of material fact as to the validity of the foreclosure defeat the motion for summary judgment, regardless of whether Next Bank presented evidence of causation?
No. And here, first of all, you have to look at the law here. Even an invalid foreclosure, that theory is just completely wrong, and we've given you the case law from the Supreme Court that you don't have to prove an invalid foreclosure. You still would have to prove they would have lost the deficiency but for some alleged error of Winstead, and we presented the court with ample authority that shows that there were numerous waivers through which the guarantor waived any complaint whatsoever about the way the foreclosure was conducted. So there are grounds of no evidence. There are grounds as a matter of law. And ultimately, we do look to what would have happened at trial and would the guarantor have been able to prevail. They have this incompetent opinion of Johnson that neglects to deal with the waivers. It fails to deal with the fact that you don't have to prove an invalid foreclosure. So a lot of this is a bunch of noise where they are failing to meet their burden, which Rogers versus Zanetti says it's the plaintiff's burden in a case alleging malpractice in connection with litigation to show with competent expert testimony they would have gotten the better result. They haven't done that. They cite two cases that are distinguishable. One of them is Elizondo out of the Supreme Court, And Elizondo is a case in which there was a massive explosion, and BP made an affirmative decision they were going to settle every case. None would ever go to trial. And on that, they'd settled over 4,000 cases. Unlike Next Bank here, the plaintiff in Elizondo argued that but for an error, he would have gotten more money and should have gotten a better settlement. Not like Next Bank here, who says, without an error, we would have won. We would have won at trial. We would have collected our deficiency. In any event, the plaintiff there presented an expert who had been personally involved in 525 of those 4,000 settlements, saying, here's what I think would have happened. And the Supreme Court rejected it, saying it's conclusory. That's no evidence. The Supreme Court says, quote, we're simply left to take his word the settlement here was inadequate. The problem is a lack of a demonstrable and reasoned basis on which to evaluate his opinion that the settlement was inadequate. It was a lot more detailed than what Mr. Johnson has done here, and the Supreme Court says that is incompetent. They also cited the Starwood case from the Supreme Court in which the DEA seized 7 airplanes. The first plaintiff's lawyer there, Mr. Swaim, failed to file a required notice. The case was dismissed. Swaim's error resulted in the plaintiff actually losing the suit because it was dismissed. It's not the same as temporarily losing an interlocutory summary judgment. The court then looked at the next lawyer who came along, Mr. Crow, who filed the required notices and had a perfect track record of recovering the airplanes each time. Again, here in the underlying case, just because they lost an interlocutory summary judgment didn't mean they could forego their burden of showing what would have happened at trial. Your Honors, for the reasons that we have argued in our brief and what we have addressed here today, we would respectfully urge that the summary judgment and the order striking Next Bank's summary judgment evidence be in all things affirmed. If there are no other questions, I'll
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've got several points to respond very quickly. Number one.
Before we get started, state your name for the record, please.
Bruce Bagelman, representing Next Bank.
Okay, thank you.
And first, let me say, I think earlier I may have said that, inadvertently said that Next Bank never objected to Mr. Johnson's affidavit. And if I said that, to clarify the record, I clearly meant that Winstead never objected to his affidavit.
I was real confused.
Glad you said that. I was so confused.
I was like, oh, my gosh, I've got this wrong.
I apologize. They never
I was like, who are you representing?
Winstead never objected to the affidavit because the motion to exclude had been denied, and they knew that there was no basis to object to it. So the uncontroverted affidavit and opinions were in the record. I didn't stand up here earlier and say that their motion for summary judgment was not a no-evidence motion. From the very beginning, I said there was two bases for their summary judgment. One was no evidence relating to causation, and one was a traditional that the foreclosure was valid as a matter of law. What I said was because Judge Ginsburg had previously ruled that causation was an issue of law, that it was improper for him to consider the no evidence motion for summary judgment or to grant the no evidence summary judgment. Mr. Kreider completely failed to address that because there is no dispute. The law in Texas is that a purely legal issue cannot be the subject of a motion for summary judgment. The fact of the matter is that they tried to exclude Mr. Johnson's opinions that his opinion regarding what would have happened at trial was insufficient or incompetent, and they lost that motion. Judge Ginsburg denied the motion and specifically said that his opinions regarding what would have happened at trial would be admissible. I respectfully disagree that the disclosure in his affidavit are incompetent. He refers to the supplemental disclosure, which is certainly permitted under the Texas rules to have a disclosure as to what expert opinions are. He specifically says, these are the opinions that I intend to offer. And it's more than a one-sentence opinion because he says that
He would opine, based on the reasoning and opinions in his 21-page October 16 report, and is more fully stated therein, that it's more likely than not that the borrower and guarantor would have prevailed on their wrongful foreclosure claims. Now they're trying to re-argue the motion to exclude that they lost. With respect to what requirement to prove what would have happened at trial, if the court will look at the first supplemental court's record at 91, the first summary judgment of many filed by Winstead in this case was that Next Bank was required to prove what would have happened at trial. We argued that before Judge Ginsburg. That motion for summary judgment was denied, and the order is attached as Appendix 2 to our opening brief. In our reply brief, in footnote 6 on page 12, we do set forth the various cases in Texas, including Rogers versus Zanetti, Elizondo versus Crist, and Starwood, that do on their face show that in all cases it is not required to prove what would have happened at the trial. And that was the argument that was made in response to the summary judgment that was first filed, and that's why the Judge Ginsburg denied that summary judgment, because he recognized that in all instances, in all cases, you don't have to prove what would have happened at trial, and that we had these two alternative causation theories, including the denial of the summary judgment in the underlying case, and if required to put on proof and prove what would have happened in the underlying trial, the expert testimony of Mr. Johnson. Regarding the this idea of defenses, number one, if the court reads the guarantees, there's nothing in there that they waived the ability to challenge the foreclosure or they any way limited their liability. They only waived defenses. Number two, this idea of defenses that the guarantor waived or whether or not the proof of a valid foreclosure was a condition to recover deficiency was not in the summary judgment that we're here on today. They are new issues that were raised improperly for the first time on appeal. If you look at their summary judgment at page 14, they say such waivers are before the court as a part of a separate summary judgment that is set for hearing on October 20th. Those issues were a part of the July 13th summary judgment, and as we set forth in our brief, the idea of the foreclosure being a condition precedent is a requirement, and the Tarrant County Savings case, I would submit that the opinion was not clearly written in there. As we cited, there's 16.
I'm sorry, your time is up.
Opinions. Thank you.
This case will be submitted on the briefs and argument of counsel. Thank you both for your presentation here today. We'll stand in recess.
All rise.